everybody, we're back with another commission podcast. This one for the 1986 science fiction fantasy classic Highlander. Starring Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery. This was... we have thanks for this to Jason Schenkel from the Nattercast. Perhaps the entire Nattercast community. You can find all their information at Nattercast.com. In fact, they recorded over a two-hour companion podcast to this podcast because this is one of favorite films, and he had two of his buddies over. I listened to like the first 30 minutes of it, and it quickly became apparent that this is going to be my recap of the Nattercast podcast if I kept going, because they just have so much trivia and information, and I've seen this movie God knows how many times. So I recommend, if you can't get enough Highlander, go to Nattercast.com, check out that podcast. I will direct link it in the show notes, because I think it was a couple months ago. What did you think? Okay. What's our experience with Highlander? Have you seen Highlander before?
You know, I don't think I've seen the whole thing before. Okay. I know I've seen parts of it. I definitely felt like it was familiar, but if I have seen it, it's been so long that I don't remember most of it.
Right. It's like Highlander's one of those like geek staples, and I grew up in the geek culture, so like, you know, there can be only one is kind of in my lexicon, right. And like, yeah, kind of knowing the basics of Highlander culture. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the movie. I set out to see the movie like 5 years ago, and I remember being kind of disappointed at how schlocky it was. but I also have fond memories of my father, who was completely obsessed with the television series. That spoiled. So I will probably refer to Connor as Duncan. Sure. At some point in this podcast,
because I was actually surprised when they call him Connor. I'm like, right, who is Connor?
It's not Duncan MacLeod from the Glenn MacLeod. So that's the TV guy.
Right.
Connor is the Christopher Lambert character. But I didn't watch the show closely. I mostly like played Legos or drew pictures on the coffee table while my dad was watching it on Saturday afternoons in syndication.
Right. This movie also was all over television.
Yes.
Too. So it, like, you know, everything in the 90s got a life on television after the theaters. And that, I think, is where I caught bits and pieces of it as I was kind of channel surfing.
Especially this movie, because it feels like this is a pretty easy edit to get to TV. Like, cut out the superfluous 80s sex scene that's required in every science fiction fantasy film, or any action film. You cut that out, and then there's not really a lot of what I would call terrible gore. Like, even the decapitations are fairly tame. They're always done at wide angle from a distance.
Or a very quick cut if they're up close.
Right. Maybe the one at the end with Clancy Brown where his like head's hanging by a flap. That might have to be
but it's all covered by like light and ghosts and
special effects and all that kind of stuff. So I will say that watching this again with the my last thought being, well, Highlander doesn't hold up as much as people say it should. I actually was surprised at how good the movie felt, mostly.
Okay.
And I'm also wondering if I went and, because Highlander 2 is legendarily bad, and like really fucks with the mythos of the series, which I think is its big charm. Like, I feel like the rules of the Highlander, if you get rid of the idea of the gathering and the gift or the prize or whatever, the there can be only one concept, if you get rid of that, it's actually a really solid universe that you could tell a lot of cool stories. Because, you know, you've got kind of like the vampiric wariness of immortality without the bullshit drawbacks of vampirism. It's just kind of a cool concept with a lot of cool fantasy rules that maybe don't make sense, but provide, you know, like the fact that they can't fight on holy ground allows the villain and protagonist to meet up and have like interesting conversations or interactions without it being the final climax or.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there were some ways in which like this movie defied my expectations in that, okay, it's cheesy, right? Let's make no bones about it. It's a cheesy 1980s action movie in a lot of respects. But it also does some pretty epic stuff. Like there is some spectacle in this fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
From like the big shots of landscapes in the Scottish uh-huh. Highlands to even that final battle on the rooftop. There's a lot of fucking spectacle there, but it's covered in cheese. And some of the things where it defied my expectations, I was surprised by, because they keep setting up this idea of, okay, can't fight on the holy ground. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Kurgan's a really bad guy. The rules are there to be broken by the bad guy. And I kept expecting him to fight on the holy ground.
No, it seems like the rules are fucking serious.
Yeah, but apparently, I guess the they're not Highlanders. They're immortals. They take these rules very, very seriously.
Yeah, I remember there's one particular point in the television series where, like, Duncan and some other dude, I think... It wasn't in a church. It was in like some sort of, it might have been a Buddhist temple. And they got so worked up, they started to fight, and like lightning started and earthquake started. And they're like, okay. Like there might be some external enforcement of these rules.
Gotcha.
Somehow.
That makes sense.
And
I kept expecting, like, when Sean Connery and Lambert, during the training montage, Lambert asks him, Connery says, if we were the last two, would you take my head? And Sean Connery just kind of laughs.
Uh-huh. But
I expected that to kind of be the end of the movie, right? Like, and then halfway through, Sean Connery dies. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Right.
I guess not.
Right. But there's a lot of, like, kind of cool questions like that to be asked. Like, what if it's your best? Like, you know, it's kind of like Survivor or Big Brother rules. You make coalitions. You try to make friends mm-hmm. with people. But then if there can be only one at the end... Like, does Sean Connery just like, hey, I've been alive for 3,000 years. You've only been 400, kid. Take my head. Like, I'm kind of tired of, like, that would be kind of a fascinating thing. And the idea that there's also something in the mythos that every immortal has kind of like an immortal tutor that finds them through some supernatural process. Like, and like teaches them. But like, why? Yeah. With the rule of there can be only one and trying to get this gift, like, seems like that, like, maybe, again, there's some kind of supernatural enforcement mechanism of that, but it seems mm-hmm. counterproductive to train your rival.
Sure.
That's going to, like that it's a certainty that they will kill you eventually.
Or at least try.
Or at least try. Or, you know, be aid and abet someone else that will.
Yeah.
So let's, before we go further, I want to turn the reins over to the Natter in chief, Jason, although I don't know what his wife, Sione, would say about that. he says, children of summer in the Bald Move community might not remember, but there was a time when fantasy movies were few and far between and rarely any good at all. The Nattercast is happy and proud to sponsor this podcast of Russell Mulcahy's literally immortal 1986 fantasy classic Highlander. What can you say about a film that takes place in Scotland yet casts Sean Connery as an Egyptian Spaniard, an American Frenchman Christopher Lambert as a Scottish Highlander? A film so awesome that when Queen was asked to write a song for the soundtrack, they wrote three. And why? Out of respect. A film so good, a sequel so bad that the film series lives up to its motto, there should have been only one. We hope you guys enjoy casting as much as we did. Please check out our companion podcast for Highlander and other classic films and current shows on Nattercast.com.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start on this because there's just so much I want to unpack.
I want to start with the thing he touched on, the Queen aspect, because this soundtrack is legitimately rocking.
Yeah, it's all Queen. I'm sure there was some original score
there as well. There is a little bit of just like moving things along kind of score. And I looked up, and as far as I can tell, Jason's assertion is correct that they were only obligated to like write the title track or like a credit track. And they saw an early screening or an early advanced copy of it. And they were so taken by the universe and the concepts and some of the romance stories and maybe some of the bromance stories, knowing Freddie Mercury, that they wrote three or four songs. In fact, they kind of came up with an album called It's a Sort of Magic.
Maybe
was the line that Lambert uses a couple times in this film.
Yeah.
There's never been a Highlander soundtrack, but that's the closest you're going to get.
Yeah.
And, you know, Queen knows how to make some fucking stadium anthem rock.
Oh, hell yeah.
And this is no exception.
There are, I will say, a couple of odd things that I found about the soundtrack, though. The Queen songs are very good songs, but I feel like in some places they're misplaced. So the opening credits, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got this badass rockin' Queen mm-hmm. song. that's just over credits. And I'm like, I wish something more exciting was happening because it's a badass song.
It really is.
Prince of the Universe deserves something better than just red text on a black background.
Yeah.
And then they go to the wrestling match and the song is kind of over.
Yeah.
And they just go into the movie. And then there's this one during the bar scene where Connor is trying to find more information about this lady who's like tailing him or whatever, part of the investigation.
Right. The forensic scientist that's also a specialist on sword.
Right.
Swords
and is just
and
kind of in it for
swords.
The swords. Yeah.
Thank God. Thank God that right. the pathologist at the NYPD happens to specialize in 17th century Japanese metallurgy because, woo.
But that song is so oddly placed. Like, it's this very sexy, like, song that you almost think they're going to hook up in that moment, but there's nothing sexy happening on the screen
They hook up at a later moment.
Much, much later in
but
the movie.
I feel
like they should have saved that song.
The Kruger listening to the track about, I forget the exact name of it, but about, you know, wanting the power to give me the power or whatever. He pops a tape into his car tape player and starts rocking out. I thought that worked really well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There were a couple of moments where Queen really hit the spot.
Mm. So
those two were not it, though.
The other thing he mentions in this little intro about Sean Connery as an Egyptian Spaniard, it does seem like a missed opportunity to have just Sean Connery be this badass Scottish Highlander rolling down out of the titular Highlands and tutoring this boy. Like, what?
Yeah.
But when he rolls up in his peacock cloak, it's hard to deny it's kind of majestic.
Sure, yeah.
Like Sean Connery prancing around in this getup for a week in Scotland or wherever they filmed it is kind of cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's really weird. So I got the impression that Sean Connery didn't really care much about this movie. And, you know, I guess I don't blame him. He's James fucking Bond.
Right. Care about, like, as much as any other. I mean, this man starred in Zardoz. I feel like if you have if you have a paycheck and some cigars and some brandy and scotch, he is more than willing to show up. And
yeah, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I mean, he's had some bad movies.
Well, let me drop a little bit of trivia on you.
Oh, shit.
The opening voiceover by Sean Connery has an echo effect because it was recorded in the bathroom of a Spanish villa. Where he had been working
in the bathroom?
Yeah, where he had been working with a voice coach in order to perfect the Spanish accent he used in the film.
So he had during his bathroom session he had been working with a coach, right?
I mean,
for about 35 seconds while he was taking a dump.
I feel like the vocal coach showed up and got him to say Milamo Sean Connery, and Sean Connery's like, "Thank you, my boy. Now let's go hit the town and get some scotch and red beef in us." And that was it. That was like, I've perfected my Spanish accent because Sean Connery talks like Sean Connery in his movie. There is no discernible, which kind of works.
I suppose that, like, that was kind of the excuse. So Christopher Lambert actually is like a guy who was born in America but lived almost his entire life in France. And so he came over and had this extraordinarily thick French accent.
Right.
And the director eventually was like, fuck it. He's from everywhere. And that's why they put in that line, like, where are you from? I'm from a lot of places.
It makes sense
so
if you...
sort of is okay.
Yeah, you get, you know, like a muddled kind of accent after being around from everywhere. And
yeah.
I mean, the only thing... I don't even know what's Egyptian about Sean Connery except for maybe the guyliner he's wearing.
I don't know, man.
Like that. Sometimes that reads as vague. Like, it's like you know, every time you see a pharaoh, he's always got the fucking, you know, like goth cat's eyes. Yeah. So like maybe that's the leftover Egyptian in him.
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But he is in glorious attire.
Yeah. No. I'd love. And the other thing is like, I don't feel like he phoned it in. Like he was. He worked on this thing for 7 days. That was his entire sum total for the film. But like, he's engaged.
So,
he's cool. He's having fun. It seems like.
I mean, yeah. When the camera is pointed at him and it's rolling, certainly. Mm-hmm. But those moments were very few and far between. Like I learned through research of this movie that Sean Connery mostly in this movie did just reaction shots and his lines, and then everything else they did without Sean Connery. Like that whole fight scene with Kurgan is not Sean Connery.
Really?
It's a stunt double fighting Kurgan.
So, I mean, except for those close-ups,
except for, like, the close-ups, right? The reaction kind of shots, yeah.
That was a pretty epic scene. Like, I liked these guys fighting, and their swords are so powerful, it's literally destroying the castle around them.
Yeah.
With their, like, that was a genuine moment. And the crew, like, Clancy Brown as the Kruger is a really solid bad guy.
Yeah.
I think. He gets a little ridiculous towards the end with the young Frankenstein bobby pin or safety pins in his neck.
Sure.
But, you know.
He felt like he was going for a punk look, so he wouldn't be
so
out of
place. Yeah, he's going for like a punk kind of skinhead, neo-skinhead type of look and succeeding.
The
problem with this, like I have with a lot of 80s movies, is, man, the B-henchman, like that first guy he fights just looks like they pulled him out of like a public library.
Uh-huh.
Like he's the assistant head
glasses on him.
Like cataloger at the New York Public Library, threw a trench coat on him, gave him a fancy French sword and said, here, wave this around with Christopher Lambert and he's going to try to carry you. Like,
yeah.
Same thing with, like, if you look at, like, Commando. Like, no one is badass in that film except for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Everybody else is a sack of shit. And like did Schwarzenegger really not know any of his, like, powerlifting buddies that could get in there and, like,
right.
You know, and do you have to put the, like, even if you got a real badass, you put him in a fishnet mesh tank top, how badass is he really going to look? And I don't know. Like,
well,
this,
they did their best. Like, that opening scene, they brought in, I guess, a guy who could do a lot of backflips, and they sent him backflipping down the hall.
That mold man didn't fucking backflip a shit. But, like, get a Ray Park type. Like, you don't need, he didn't say a goddamn word. So just get, like, our, like, Olympic fencer or something and have him carry Christopher Lambert and give me an exciting fight. I don't understand the Conan the Librarian that we got.
Well, the beginning of this movie is strange to me, too, because...
Sure.
It's so the music is so fucking epic.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so let's start at the beginning. There's the opening narration with the queen and the epic music there.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything yet because it's just credits.
Right.
Then they go to this wrestling match, which was, I guess, supposed to be a hockey match at the beginning. But
and that would have that's the thing. Like,
the hockey league said, we don't want to be associated.
Why isn't
with
Immortal
it?
Hanging around a off-brand WWE exhibition?
I guess it seemed to me like he was tracking this guy down.
Yeah, but, like, again, why would the other guy also be like
yeah.
If it was boxing, that would have been kind of cool. Because, like, I buy that an immortal would be attracted to, like, violence and displays of violence because of just their nature. So, like, make it, like, a really, like, you could do a really gritty boxing. Hockey would have been amazing.
Yeah.
It's too damn bad the NHL is like, hey, man, we don't want our fucking sport associated with violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We don't want a sport where people routinely throw down their gloves and sticks and just punch each other in the face. To where we have a dedicated penalty box
there.
To throw them in so they can cool down. And that, yeah, like, we don't want to be associated, like teeth on the ice, fine. But, like, fantasy decapitations, get the fuck out of here. And you got this, like, ridiculous wrestling kind of thing.
Yeah, and then, but there's a really cool shot there, I thought, with this wire cam that they do. It's called the Sky Cam, and I guess invented by the guy who made the Steadicam.
Which is crazy it took, because I remember when that first came to the NFL and you started seeing this little camera racing on four wires, like, that they had this in 1986? What took you so goddamn long to employ that for, like, any kind of field sport?
Yeah, no, that
makes,
like, a lot of
sense. Really, really, now I'm kind of surprised they don't use drones or something, but...
But then I have no, like... I have no grounding in this movie unless I've already seen this movie or know of it generally, because Christopher Lambert might be the hero or he might be the bad guy at the beginning. There's nothing to indicate who I should be rooting for in this first fight. And the music is just pumping. Like, they're trying to get me psyched up for it, and I get it. It's a cool fight, but come on, man. I don't know anything about the setting yet.
Right.
Maybe give me some background on it.
Yeah, it's kind of the coldest of cold openings.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, the opening at a wrestling, I wish that was a little bit better, because I think it would have set the tone for the whole film.
It's kind of a dark comedy to it, because I can imagine, like, the people, like, they show the scenes of the people finding the head that's been lopped off the body and all that, but going out to your car, like, to go home after that event.
Right.
and just the pure amount of vandalism that's been done
to
this parking garage, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Right, yeah. Like my
I'd be so pissed.
My battery's drained. My headlights are exploded.
I got to work tomorrow.
My oil pan has exploded, and there's no oil in my car. But I'm saying, like, if they had the hockey or maybe boxing and that first fight had been against a more worthy opponent, like, I think this film would have, because that's all right, but to me, I found myself really attracted to the scenes from the past. Like, all that stuff in Scotland, because, like, there was real chemistry between, I think, Connor and, I guess, is her name Heather MacLeod, or his first wife, or, I don't know, his blonde Highlander wife. I thought that was really interesting. Like, Sean Connery spices up every scene he's in.
Some of the best scenes of the movie, I think, were the flashbacks.
Yeah. And, like, this big, large-scale, like, medieval Scottish melee was super cool.
Yeah, him realizing, why aren't they attacking me? I thought...
Yeah.
Even though he's just, like, literally standing there saying, they're not attacking me, I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, and the fact that they paid that off, because the Kruger said, like, I need to be the one to kill him because somehow I know he's immortal, even though he's like he's on the cusp.
Yeah.
See, Kruger, that's the winning game plan. Not find this guy and teach him. Find him and cut his head off and get his quickening before he's even.
So maybe there's an incentive to power them up. Maybe you get more power from a more powerful immortal.
Yeah, it's like picking up a tomato before it's ripe.
You can eat it, but it won't be nearly as good.
Yeah, they're only good for frying up. You want a vine-ripe tomato to put on your hamburger.
I think we solved that puzzle.
Okay, that's a good point. So it's a long game versus short, you know.
Sean Connery would have lopped his head off 1,000 years from
now. He was just fattening up like a calf. Uh-huh. But I like the Kruger's armor was kind of goofy, but it works in kind of this high fantasy concept. Mm-hmm. But it's unfortunate because everything happening in modern New York was so much more broad and hammy. Like, all the police officers are just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous stereotypes of police officers. Like, I'm surprised they just weren't carrying 5 crates of donuts and, you know, but, like, yeah.
Including the private dick from the Big Lebowski. He's in there.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
you're
just right. A much younger version of him.
Did you see that one of the guy who sets Connor free, or like he doesn't set him free, he just gets him out of village before they kill him? That's the old bear.
Yep.
Only he's like the middle-aged bear from Game of Thrones.
Looks almost exactly the same, I'd say.
That's the cool thing about a lot of these old schlocky 80s action scenes. It's like Crawl has a very young Liam Neeson in it. Mm-hmm. Excalibur, I can't remember who. Like, Excalibur has a shit ton of, like, eventually famous people in it. Hmm. But, like, you know, the chief pleasure of being, like, a 40-year-old or... you know, anywhere, you know, like a Gen Xer or whatever, watching these movies, like, oh my God, look at all these famous people before they were famous. Uh-huh. And they're making just terrible movies. I don't know what Sean Connery's excuse is, but... And this isn't a terrible movie.
No, it's not a terrible movie. It's a cheesy movie that has moments.
Right. And I don't, like, I also wonder, like, for its time, was it actually cheesy? Because if you look at other contemporary action films of the day, they're kind of all like show me the like Annihilation of this era.
Yeah,
I guess it would be 2001: A Space Odyssey. Like there
were big budget, like massive, impressive movies like that. But I mean, certainly this thing feels epic, and the stunt work and the effects work is all surprisingly good.
Yeah.
For what I'm sure was a low budget.
And another thing that that they were talking about right before I shut off their podcast was the transitions. Mm-hmm. Like the sweeping pan up from the parking garage that looks like it pops out of ground from Scotland. The Christopher Lambert's pained, anguished face bleeding into the Mona Lisa reproduction. There's a lot of like really cool transitions to kind of signify flipping back to the past and back to the future. Something, honestly, I wish more filmmakers would spend time doing today, because I felt like, I mean, Walking Dead's a terrible example because they're bad at a lot of things, but there are tried and true techniques to show when you are jumping around in a timeline, and you can be creative with them or you can do the tried and true, but do something, because some of this shit where it's like overlapping underlapping, twisted up timelines, it's very hard. Very hard. Like Breaking Bad always like used the saturation level to tell you when you're going back in the past. Like you gotta do something. And this guy who directed this film, Russell Mulcahy. He was the premier music video guy in the 80s.
Yeah, directed the first music video to air on MTV.
Yeah, Video Killed the Radio Star, Turning Japanese, and just like he just it's like he worked with dozens and dozens of artists in the 80s, and Highlander does have a lot of kind of fairly modern editing feel to it. It's very quick, kinetic cuts. That were kind of like things that were pioneered in the music video genre, and this guy just took that and made like a really kick-ass fantasy film out of it.
Yeah. There are just a lot more action sequences that I want to talk about.
Yeah, no.
Some of them hilarious, some of them awesome.
I also had like a lot of questions that came up as I was watching the movie that I didn't expect to get answers to, and I was kind of impressed that I did. Like, for example, they establish he's a Highlander, but he's also going around with a ninja sword.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the fuck? But they, like, by the time the film's over, you understand.
He
like,
got it from Sean Connery.
And also, why is an Egyptian Spaniard using? Well, because his last wife, the one that he loved the most, his father-in-law was a master swordsmaker, and he kind of carries that in tribute to that. So, like, yeah.
And apparently, like,
it wasn't just because ninja swords are cool, you know?
The master, so there's something about this that doesn't quite line up for me with this sword. So the sword expert in this movie, I forget her name, the also police forensics expert.
Right. She's utterly forgettable. It's telling that I remember Heather's name and this other is like...
I think it starts with a B.
Blanda.
Blanda.
Her name's Blanda.
Yeah. Brenda. I think it actually is Brenda.
Okay.
So she says somewhere along the way that she's analyzed the sword and there's... She gets those fragments, which I guess swords just break into walls now with huge chunks of metal coming out of them.
Right. Well, I mean, he did like bury that katana 3 or 4 inches into a concrete pylon. So sure, why not?
So she gets it. She analyzed it and she says it was folded 200 times. It's like 700 years before technology was invented.
Japanese Damascus steel kind of thing they had going on.
So Sean Connery like taught this master swordsman how to do that?
I didn't think
he just gave him the time and money to figure it out.
It's one of those things where like he maybe discovered something that was lost for hundreds of years because he was so far ahead of his time I don't know. Hung out with a Highlander, and it seems like being associated with a Highlander is bad for you, or not a Highlander, an immortal,
right,
is bad for your health. I mean, look at
they'll attack the other immortals, will
all
attack the people,
like,
you love.
The people that you love get kind of caught up in it, so
which is kind of the main thrust of this movie, right?
Right.
Thematically, it's
the main
all
stab,
about like
the main slice, sure.
The tragedy of living forever, I
sure.
guess.
Sure. Yeah, especially when you're locked in immortal combat with all the other crazy people in the world.
That's funny because Christopher Lambert has both been in Mortal Kombat and Immortal Kombat.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about Christopher Lambert for a moment.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Because, like, Christopher Lambert, it reminds me a lot of, like, I forget. I came up with this when I was doing my research or doing my thinking about it. Who's the guy in Clockwork Orange?
Which one?
Malcolm McDowell.
Yes.
I feel like Christopher Lambert, like Malcolm McDowell, is used in B and below level schlock to lend it a bit of legitimacy because he is, you know, like, oh, Malcolm McDowell, you don't think of Malcolm McDowell from like fucking Wing Commander 4 and all the other crazy, like the knockoff fantasy on all the other bullshit he's done. And you think of him like, oh, it's Clockwork Orange and Caligula.
Right.
Like he's been in big stuff that, you know, was important and
a respected actor.
Yeah, a respected actor. And then Christopher Lambert has a cameo in, you know, Mortal Kombat, and suddenly, like, in that gives, like, him instant geek cred.
Mm-hmm.
The movie instant geek cred. And he's been in a lot of, like, really terrible direct-to-video, direct-to-Netflix kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
But he is not bad as a leading man.
No, I don't think...
You
he's
think
any
he's
good.
Bad?
Yeah, I mean,
you
he's
know,
got this just
wait.
Look.
Oh, shit. Because
so dopey.
The other thing I was going to ask you, and now I'm going to feel like an asshole, is he kind of reminds me of our friend Levi.
Oh, no. You want Levi's acting analog, it's Tom Hardy.
Oh, for sure.
Levi's an exact duplicate of Tom Hardy visually.
For sure, for sure. With like, if you cast Hardy with, like, more of a much darker hair color, then yeah. But I feel like there's a little bit of him and Christopher Lambert. Now I feel like it's an insult. I didn't mean it as an insult, but...
No, I don't think Levi's anything like Christopher Lambert. I think Christopher Lambert looks like a dope.
Okay.
He looks like a sunken-eyed... Something is happening in the eye region that I don't like. It puts me off.
Okay. All right. Noted.
I will say that.
Noted.
I don't know if it's the brow or a cross-eyed or a combination of both. It's frightening.
So you're not a big fan of the Lambert?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
I wonder if he's been, because like I can literally think of like this, that kooky Tarzan movie he made in the 80s, and Mortal Kombat. I've seen him on countless like VHS and DVD covers at like Blockbuster and Mr. Video and the Hometown Video shops, but I've never actually watched a lot of his catalog.
I looked it up. I guess most recently he had a very small part in Hail Caesar. As the film director.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did we catch that?
I don't think so.
Huh. Because I looked at a recent picture. He's only like 60 years old.
Yeah.
And he's still recognizably Christopher Lambert.
Absolutely.
I can't believe I didn't catch that. That's interesting. He's also had an interesting love life because he like was married to Diane Lang for a long time. He was also married to that... what is that? Sophie Meursault. She was like one of the Bond girls from the Pierce Brosnan. He's had an interesting personal life as well as an American Frenchman, dashing American international Frenchman abroad. But you're not a fan. Okay.
No, not a fan at all.
All right. Well, I'll just shunt off all the Christopher Lambert questions I was going to follow up on.
I guess maybe it's the four. Maybe. It's the 400 years of living that's just made him look dopey.
Yeah.
He's just very tired.
Yeah.
But yeah, something about him.
What?
There are a lot of other like cameos in here, or I guess things that I would call cameos in retrospect.
Yeah.
But they're not like so Hugh Quarshie, he's literally the only black guy in this entire movie.
Right.
I don't know if you recognize him, but he might look familiar because he's Captain Panaka in Star Wars.
No.
Yeah, totally. And he's also going to be in Red Sparrow.
Interesting.
Week.
I'll see that tomorrow night. That's crazy.
He's in Wing Commander.
I guess that's the thing is, like, I'm surprised how young he looked in Star Wars, but that's been a long fucking time ago. That was 1999.
Yeah.
So never 13 mind.
13 years after this.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. What do you think about the Highlander? Because I always think the Highlander mythology is very interesting. And every time I'm exposed to the Highlander mythology, I always go to like the Highlander wiki or the fandom.com thing or whatever it is. And like there's just like tons of stuff and there's like multiple contradictory canons. And like, you know, the second movie asserts that they're essentially aliens. And there's like a lot of crazy stuff. But like the concept of these immortal beings that are compelled as some sort of game to kill each other, and then they gain the memories, experiences, wisdom, and power of the previous one, so they get ever more powerful. They can't fight on holy ground. They have like an awareness, like a buzz when they're in the same room as another one. They can recognize themselves from a distance. Like, I think that's super cool, and I'm surprised, like, well, there's got to be a Highlander role-playing game out there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'm actually surprised, like, no one's tried to make this into, like, an MMORPG.
Because
it seems like that's a great hook, that you just got, like, you got an open world with a bunch of NPCs, and there are Highlanders, or immortals. I keep saying they're the Highlander, because the Highlander is the one guy, the immortals are everybody.
Right. Yeah.
Like, there's all these immortals, and it's, like, global. You could go anywhere, and you have to, like, slowly, like, each, like, there might be seasons of the game where... Like, you know, you spend a year traveling this virtual world to hunt down everybody else, and then somebody wins, and it's like the longest game of PUBG ever. Like, why hasn't that happened? Because what do you do? What do you do once you get your head chopped off in the first 5 minutes of play, and you got to wait a year for the reset? I mean,
go spin up another server, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it's not a MMO so much as it's like some kind of like PUBG style, or you're dropped in this New York City.
You could even do it like
It's PUBG with melee combat, and it's like in the Division style New York City kind of scale. Mm-hmm. And you just have to find, and it's set during the gathering when there's only like a handful of you left, and you just have to track each other down through that map and kill each other in single combat.
You could even do like one-on-one matches. So like you have all the players competing, but they're competing one-on-one at a time.
Yeah.
So like you spin up an instance of the game, and you and one other person are put into right. this map with a bunch. It's like Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it Brotherhood? It's the one where
the multiplayer is
a bunch of NPCs, and you're trying to hunt down other
characters. You just got to watch out for those dudes with the long beaks, man.
Right. And you can act like you're an NPC.
Yeah,
you can
try and blend in,
and that's pretty cool.
But it's already kind of like a cool metagaming. Like, do you like lay low and avoid combat, but know that the people that are actually out there mixing up are getting ever more powerful, the ones that survive?
Right.
So do you want to be the guy camping in the second floor of a building on PUBG that gets, you know, spend 30 minutes hiding and then gets slaughtered by the guy that killed 12 people? I don't know.
I mean, I do have questions about the
I feel like the Highlander franchise has kind of been mismanaged, other than maybe the television series, which I got way too much stuff to go back, but I think it would be super fun to go back and watch that.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But I'm curious about the rules of the Highlander game. Not the video game, not the role-playing game, just as portrayed in the movies. Like,
okay, I'll see if I can answer
this gathering thing that they're playing. So it appears to me that the Kurgan should be the most powerful being of all, because he's killed the most Highlanders.
Sure.
So is it kind of like Star Wars, where a Jedi can be powerful without actually having really practiced or anything, and it's just some natural ability? Or does it relate in any way to the number of people you've killed and stolen the powers from?
It has to. But
if that's true, then the Kurgan should have no problem defeating Connor.
Not only that,
who has killed zero people.
Not only that, but why does Sean Connery come and find Connor and say, I've been looking for you because you're the last best hope to be able to stop this guy 400 years ago. Like, but
so
you're
I guess
already
it must be natural ability.
You're already 2,000 years old and have probably killed countless immortals. And also Sean Connery kind of takes the Kruger for the distance. Like, he comes close to killing him.
Very close. He chops his neck. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. A little bit deeper, and mm-hmm. it would have been all over. But yeah, there. If it's just the number of people you absorb, it's like one of those runaway win conditions, you know?
Right.
Where there's just this guy so far ahead, there's no way. There's got to be some kind of also natural inborn ability, or else. Or maybe it's the Kruger is so overconfident and just doesn't take it seriously.
Mm. Yeah.
And then he also doesn't have anything to fight for other than power and glory, where Connor is trying to save this bland
right.
Pathologists.
And my biggest question of the whole thing is, mm-hmm. what the fuck is the quickening?
Well,
can you describe to me the quickening and what it is, what it means?
I think the quickening is when you receive the power of another immortal, but
there are problems with that in this movie.
Yes. No, because Sean Connery says you are experiencing the quickening
when they're looking at the stag and they're running down the beach.
Yeah.
This is the quickening boy.
Now, I don't know if that what he's actually saying, because I also think the first time, like, they also refer to first time you die or should have died and survive as the quickening as well.
Oh,
and that makes sense,
God.
Because quickening is literally a medieval term for when a baby moves for the first time in the womb.
Okay.
Like, it's the first concrete sign that you have a life inside you. It's like when life kind of begins, or it's obvious that it's there. And it makes sense that the quickening would be like when a Highlander dies and then they're reborn as, well, I'm sorry, an immortal dies and reborn as an immortal. Like, that would be called the quickening. And then, like, chopping someone's heads off should be called the empowering or something.
Right.
But
it's all very confused. Like, Sean Connery, might as well be drinking a beer saying, this is the quickening.
Yeah, like, right.
What the fuck are
Maybe
you talking
Maybe the quickening
about?
Is anything that in like is like powering up as an immortal. Like when you first are killed, that's a quickening. When you first learn
Outrun
to
a stag.
When you first learn to to call on the power of the stag, that's the that's the quickening. When you kill a Highlander and get all, or fucking immortal. When you kill a immortal and you get all their shit inside you, then that's the quickening. Like
there is a very Jedi thing going on here,
yeah.
Like this connection with nature, right?
Yeah,
they do mention how it's a connection to all things, and then at the end, the
when
prize,
when he gets the prize, it's like he has universal like omniscience
knowledge, yeah.
But he also a marked decrease in his omnipotence because he now says that he's mortal.
Right.
So, like, you've got the rest of your mortal life to do either great, like awesome things, either for good or evil. Because, like, obviously the Krugan, he took over. He was going to grind humanity underneath his heel for...
Right. It makes me... For an eternity is what they say. So it makes me wonder if the prize isn't tailored to what you want.
Yeah. Or if
it's essentially
you...
like a birthday wish that you
get. Yeah,
because
Because
Connor McLeod has always...
Wanted children.
Wanted to...
And a family.
To live or whatever, right?
Right.
As a human being.
It's the one thing he couldn't have.
Yeah.
And he kept on trying to make that happen, like staying with Heather until she died, rescuing. Like, I really like the plot where you find out his assistant, his, like, you know, kind of advanced middle-aged assistant is the girl that he rescued from the Nazis.
Yeah.
That he,
which,
he kind of had, it's like his adoptive daughter. He tries to keep making this family thing work.
He does.
And then, unfortunately, the blandest woman that he's ever been with is the one who becomes his, you know, mortal love.
Right. So apparently I was reading that in the original American Fox release version, that World War II scene is taken out.
Yeah.
Which completely fucks this movie
up,
in my
opinion.
Yeah,
right. Because it's like, I think without that scene, you'd be left to imagine that Christopher...
That he just hooked up with the first person... To run through his vision,
right? Or that he like, has kind of led this poor assistant on romantically, and when he's leaving, like she's like, he's like, "Hey, baby, should have known I was immortal.
Right.
Fuck off," you know, like in favor of this. I don't know. Yeah,
and then he gets like shot with Cupid's arrow or something at the end. It's
right.
It's really weird without that scene. I think they fucked up doing
There's
that.
A lot of like the lovemaking scene is so shoehorned in, and then like like this movie. You know, pace what the Nattercast said has got great transitions, but immediately smash cutting to lions fighting over scraps of food is bizarre. They're trying to say something with that, and I'm not, I guess I'll have to listen to the rest of the podcast to find out.
That boner you got going after that scene.
Maybe. Just, you know, the other thing is, like, I feel like there could have been a couple more takes on a couple occasions. Like I thought Clancy Brown was a really great villain.
Yeah.
He actually plays great villains a lot. Like, he really plays an asshole, a memorable asshole in The Shawshank Redemption. He plays, like, the bent screw, the head bent screw. But, like, when he's in his hotel room, like, assembling his sword, which I thought was a super hilarious idea, he's got this, like...
It's a terrible idea,
Like, the way, like, a master assassin has his custom-made rifle to breaks down, he's got this thing. But he puts it together, and he, like, puts it in front of his face, and it activates the little crazy Klingon claws. He blinks. like he has a startle reflex.
Like, he hasn't been doing this for 4,000 years.
Yeah, dude, you've been doing this for at least 400 years. Uh-huh. There's no fucking way you're going to blink when that blade pops out. Like, just get a second take. Okay, Clint, okay, I get it. You didn't know you have blade right 3 inches from your eyes, but, like, okay, try not to do that. There's a couple things like that. And a couple of, like, really awkward swings with the swords that I feel like maybe get another take on that.
Yeah.
But it's a $14 million budget. They, like, seems like there was also some, like they went to England for some reason to film the garage scene and found out that the garages in England have, like, ridiculously low ceilings and they couldn't use. So, like, it seems like there was a lot of scrambling and, like, rushed, and they only had Sean Connery for, like, 7 days and a lot of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I thought a great sequence was, like, the Carmageddon style, like, when he hijacked Connor's, you know, bland NYPD crime scene investigator and, like, took her on a joyride.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was a really cool sequence that shows that, like, this guy does just, like, that must be truly terrifying.
Uh-huh.
Like, not only is he Clancy Brown, he looks like young Frankenstein, but you know he's immortal and doesn't give a fuck.
Right.
It's kind of like, what's that Kurt Russell the Tarantino Rodriguez joint, Death Proof.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little shades of Death Proof, where, like, you know, you're just terrified that this guy is going to run you head on into a semi and not care.
Yep. That was a good action scene. I thought Kurgan versus Captain Panaka in the alley was a similarly, like, hilarious. That's kind of the lead up to it, right?
Yeah.
There's this hilarious thing where he. So he kills this. Oh, he doesn't kill the Marine. He stabs him through
should
with a sword.
Stabbed him, picks him up, yeah. And then swings him. Like, that guy should have been cut in half.
And you can see, like, the cables in several instances that are holding people up.
Yeah.
This is one of those.
Same with when he's receiving the gift, man. There's a lot of bad wire work.
Yeah. And then he jumps in. So he cuts the top off of this car, practically.
Yeah.
And he pulls the old man out, and then he jumps in with the old lady, and he just drives off maniacally.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of things that I always wish would happen in movies that never do, like the
right.
insane, truly insane, just weird off the wall stuff. And in this movie it does, and I was like, yeah, that's good.
I like the Kurgan as a bad guy because he just, it's almost foolhardy in that, like, you are trying to keep a low profile, but you're going to go into a church in New York City and just scandalize all
yeah.
these priests and nuns and parishioners in the most profane way possible, and you're going to just, like, you know, you don't even have to kill, like in a shittier film, he would have just killed the old lady.
Yeah.
But, like, why would he? He doesn't give, he's having more fun. Yeah. Like, it's more fun for him to just fuck with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty good villain.
Yeah.
And in a different way, like, because, you know, we just talked about, like, the Killmonger from Black Panther being a good villain because he's so, like, easy to empathize with or, like, understand mm-hmm. how he got to be. Whereas Kruger's the opposite. He's just a villain that's, like, he just loves being the bad guy.
Yeah.
And that is also something that you... That's another...
And I feel like that's...
memorable type of villain. Like,
it's
Darth Vader.
It's sort of fitting that the movie opens with a wrestling match because he's an ultimate heel, right?
I guess
in
that's
a lot
true.
Of respects.
I guess that's true.
And I know they didn't plan that,
right.
but it's definitely... of a theme.
Right. Yeah, that Ric Flair dude with the sequined rebel flag, man. So, like, in his wrestling, and I'm like, where is the Southern fried part of this? And it's like his stage name was Freebird.
Yeah.
So he's built his entire persona about a glammed up version of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I guess so.
Like, that's pretty hilarious.
Real wrestlers, or are they fake for the movie wrestlers?
Probably. I mean, it's so easy to find jobber wrestlers, man.
Yeah.
Like, if we wanted to film a wrestling scene for Bald Move, I bet...
Go hire the maniac.
30 minutes on the Cincinnati subreddit, we would yeah. have, like, 5 or 6 dudes, beefy dudes, ready to, like, smash themselves with metal chairs for our on-camera amusement.
Yeah.
I bet it's because they fucking love doing it. It seems like it's dirt cheap. It's a passion thing. I don't get it, but whatever. And I just recently drove down to Florida. I passed innumerable Confederate flags, and I wish yeah. I had the budget to sneak in the dead of night and replace them all with the sequined version. Because if you're going to fly that shitty surrender flag, it just ought to look fabulous,
yeah.
is what I'm saying. Anyway.
Another action scene that I wanted to talk about is when Kurgan is fighting Connor, kind of like behind this, I don't know if it's a refinery or something, and
the neon
Brenda,
sign?
No, not the final
red,
climax.
Not the red cup or cup red? Or...
Actually, it might lead into that. I think it okay. leads into that. The silver cup? No.
Silver cup, yes.
No, they're still down on the ground at this point, and they're fighting, and this police helicopter comes flying in.
Yeah.
Just like the police helicopter saw these two dudes fighting mm-hmm. in an alley and mm-hmm. decided to fly down in there to ask them kindly to please stop. It's the most ineffective stopping of a fight I've ever seen. They shout at them, put down your weapons.
Right.
There's no follow-up. They're mm-hmm. not like, or we're going to kill you from above. No,
yeah.
they're just going to ask you nicely.
That's also hilarious, the idea that this guy could be arrested. He's arrested fleeing a murder scene
uh-huh.
at high speed, punches two cops at the scene, is taken back for questions, punches another one, and he's just relieved.
Are you under arrest?
No.
No.
You weren't before, but you've assaulted 3 officers, and, like, also the fact that they just wouldn't have pulled out the guns and killed him.
Right.
Although, you know, obviously he wouldn't have died, because he's got that a certain kind of magic to him, but...
Yeah. You have to fake it.
I do, like, we talked about the fight locations, but I do think one of the things that elevates this is the, like, you know, all these things are kind of have been done since, mm-hmm. but like the crumbling castle, fighting on a neon billboard, inside yeah. the parking garage, inside the industrial complex, that then, like, I think. I love the final quickening, and I hate it too, because like him in front of those glass windows that blow out behind him as he's levitating the air, the electricity is so iconic and awesome.
Yeah,
I don't know what they were thinking with the demon, the cartoon demons swirling around and the lions and stuff.
They said that some of it was like the lightning, I guess, was to hide the cables.
Which, bad job,
yeah,
because
I saw
the cables a lot, and not... What's I only noticed the cables in the close-ups, and I'm like, you could have just had him standing up against a backdrop with his arms spread going, ah, and you wouldn't have to have cables. Like, why do right. we need a close-up of him in his harness?
I mean, Star Wars had been out for years uh-huh. and years and years at this point.
Yeah.
We know how to do blue screen, green screen
sure.
tech.
Sure.
Do some of that, man.
Yeah, like if you want a close-up of him screaming and you're not showing his legs, have
yeah.
him stand in front of that industrial thing. You don't even use green screen. Just like,
yeah,
you know, put down the telephoto lens. Plus, also, like, it was also for like a quarter of a second. Like, how mm-hmm. hard would it be to like just paint those out of individual frames? Again,
yeah.
$14 million budget. Super compressed shooting schedule and probably similarly compressed post-production, but it's a damn shame. It's
yeah.
a damn shame.
Because I do like that rooftop battle, though. It's
yeah.
staged really,
it's
really
very
neatly.
Cool. And like I wish that there's some things like the Kruger not slowly, taking out all the supports. I wish that had been a bigger.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But also
him doing the ballerina twirls as he's
cool.
cutting the sign down. Like that. A little bit more kinetic of a set, and I think that would have been even better.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way that the scaffolding crumbled. I like that the water container just kind of makes a pool on the
yeah.
roof. But then there are some really puzzling things about that scene, too. Like,
yeah.
for instance, when they fall through the roof, where's the water? Where's the water that they just fell
yeah.
down through? Why doesn't it come rushing down
yeah.
and just cover that floor in water?
Yeah.
How does Brenda get down there so fucking quickly when they have just fallen five stories down to the floor and she was up on the roof watching them?
I also like how when she hits the Krugan with that pipe, it's more like she just taps him with it to get his attention.
Yeah.
Like no, swing at him. That is, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's a rubber pipe. Put a pad under Clancy's fucking leather jacket and just wallop him.
He probably wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have the exact same effect. It's just extra hilarious. That's the thing is, I kept on thinking, like, man, if this movie was like 10% better
mm-hmm.
or had a little bit more budget, a little bit more time, like,
yeah,
it might be a real classic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, why couldn't this be the sci-fi fantasy version of Indiana Jones, where it's just
sure.
it's just a really well done romp. Because and maybe even like a little like a tiny bit smarter because it's got the time travel aspect and like a person who's like some of the world building is super cool, like his lair that's just got all of this historical shit that's like real
mm-hmm.
and like he opens up this bottle of Hennessy from 1782, which I'm like, huh, turns out Hennessy's been operating since 1765.
Wow.
And a bottle not of Hennessy but of another I think Remy Martin was auctioned for several million dollars from like 1793 back in the 90s. So like, you know, he's just the fact that he's got one of these bottles he saves for a special occasion
mm-hmm.
and rattles off all those facts about the year. Like, I think that's I don't know. I guess if he's immortal, you would think that those years like wouldn't be special, like any individual or given year wouldn't be special. But then again, he's an immortal, and it seems like that they're like a cut above mortals as far as like all of their abilities. So
mm-hmm.
maybe he can recall all that shit.
Yeah,
but it's cool. It's
it makes
cool.
me wonder what kind of life he leads, because clearly he has money, right?
The antiquities dealer seems like the perfect cover for him.
Absolutely, yeah. So I guess he's like a very, very successful antiquities dealer, which
right.
surprises me that people don't just know him.
Mm.
Especially
would
this
you know,
woman
like
with
if
the
we
sword.
Have an antiquities dealer, a wealthy antiquities dealer in Cincinnati, would you know him?
No, but I think like if we had professional podcasters in the area, which we do, I would certainly know of them. and I could recognize them walking down the street, right? Okay. And this lady who is the forensics analyst or whatever,
right?
She would know him, right. I would think.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
At least by reputation.
Hmm, yeah.
Because he's got to be super successful. I mean, look at his apartment. His right. apartment alone must cost him a ton of money.
But I wonder if he, like, just keeps a very low profile. Like, when he needs money, he goes and sells a bottle of Remy Martin for $50 million, and then he's good.
He could,
sells an antique French dueling rapier that he took off a Highlander for $1 million. And because as an immortal,
well,
you would just be, if you live 400 years and you were not a complete dumbass, you would be wealthy beyond all measure if you just like put a fucking pound sterling in a bank in England and just let it sit
sure.
there.
Yeah.
And get interest. Like, it's so easy to amass wealth when you're immortal.
But you also can't, like, know what is going to be an antiquity and what isn't, right? Like, you can't say, well, this particular sword is going to be the thing that's the most rare and the most prized 300 years from now.
Hmm.
You just simply wouldn't. So you would have to end up buying your stuff pretty much like normal people do after the fact, right? And you also can't be everywhere to get those artifacts. So, like, 400 years ago, how does he get to the place to get the sword and then know which swords to get before their actual antiquity?
I feel like because this is kind of interesting. Because I guess,
what would you go and grab right now if you were looking to make money 300 years from now?
I don't even think that's like, but let's say that, like, you know, we're immortal and we have, I don't know, like, I've got, like, right here in the Bald Move liquor shelf, we've got a bottle of, Lagavulin, all right? Mm-hmm. And we go 10 years and we're immortals and we don't drink that. It's like, you know what? I'm going to set it for a special occasion. If you just wait, how much of this shit in this room 400 years from now would be worth a ton of money?
Is it going to be millions, or is it going to be like, it's worth $5,000?
I don't
know.
Because
$5,000 is not enough to pay his rent for a month. Like,
I'm just saying, like, if you just acquire shit from like if you had a silver spoon from the Revolutionary War period, and it wasn't even from Paul Revere, it was like from a well-known silversmith, and you just kept that, like, it would probably be worth money. Like, so much stuff 400 years in pristine condition is just going to be worth money. I think you'd acquire it by accident, just as mementos and stuff. Your money, for example, if you got, like,
perhaps, but I don't feel like he has gotten his money that way. I feel like a lot of the antiquities dealing he must be doing is lucrative for him.
Oh, so you think, because see, I saw that as a cover for why he's got all this old shit and money.
You're seeing it as
he's made money on that.
I see it as both, yeah.
Huh. It just seems like, I've always thought that, like, if you were immortal, I always took it for granted that
But he's only been immortal for 400 years.
True.
Right? It's not a period.
I kind of assumed, and this is just something I just realized I made up in my own head, that wouldn't he have everything that Ramirez had? Like, who else would take it?
Everything that Ramirez had? What,
yeah.
The sword?
No, I'm just saying, like,
he does have the sword.
Sean Connery was super wealthy, too. He dressed like crazy wealthy for the time. He was the he's a chief metallurgist for a king. Like, he's got mad
right.
bank. And
yeah, but he didn't tell him, here's the keys to my fortune, should I perish?
Maybe not.
He didn't even know where the fucking guy lived, as far as I can tell. Like, he shows up in the woods one day and finds him.
But they spent
on a cliff.
Didn't
and
they establish that they spent like 5 years together? I thought that
training,
there was like a five.
A while.
So like I feel like that maybe that I don't know. You're right. I'm just making shit up.
Yeah,
I'm just making shit up.
I guess I am too. I'm trying to decipher his lifestyle.
I just thought it's because I just never. I mean, I took it as an axiom almost that if you live for several hundred years, you will be super wealthy if you do nothing but just, you know, put some money in a bank that gets 2 or 3% interest.
Like, I think, yeah, that
compounding interest will make you wealthy. And then if you're super smart and super resourceful, like an immortal would be, that's just icing on the cake. Like, if I had 300 years of business acumen, that's such a huge advantage. Even if I didn't have a super intelligence or like any kind of heightened senses, like, you know, if I can feel the heartbeat of a stag, I can certainly feel the heartbeat of someone trying to work me over or lie to me, or like, that's such a huge advantage. It would just be like money would be just beside the point. Like, you want enough to like you not have to worry about it, and then everything else is, I don't know what else you do as an immortal. You try to find other people's heads to cut off, I guess.
I guess so.
I mean, that's the interesting thing is, and I think they explored that with the TV series more. Like, what if you happen to have, like, a soul of a poet, and you are an immortal, and now you have to, like, you're either going to die quick, or you're like, ah, God, I hate everything about this life I'm forced to live, but I guess I'm going to have to do it, you know?
You got to find Cyril Farrell.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll teach you the ways.
Yeah.
The poet and the warrior.
Right. Like, there's just, like, or, you know, I mean, I guess it's, you get used to anything, right? Like, if you have to have kidney dialysis every couple days, like, that sucks, but you got to do it to keep living, right?
I guess so.
But that's, you know, like I said, the universe, that's why I say the universe is so durable, and I'm surprised that, I mean, with all the remakes and retreads and whatnot, like, why hasn't, like Jason Shankle, you know, he is involved in filmmaking. Where is the 40s to 50-year-old director who grew up on Highlander and thinking it's super cool, but also with the wisdom of age realizes where they went wrong and some of the problems with it and just wants to reboot it as, like, a cool trilogy? Or, like, an HBO series, or...
So, I know they've been talking about doing this. There were a lot of people, like, slated to do remakes of it, and it just never happened, I guess.
Because, like I said, it's the... You know, this might be my new favorite answer, because this is something that we get asked several times a year. Like, if you had unlimited budget, or, like, what's the remake that needs to happen? Like, it might be The Highlander, because the bones of this concept are strong.
Yeah.
And it's been executed with more or frequently less than desired competence, but, you know, the idea is super cool and kind of timeless and universal.
Can you tell me when The Gathering actually started? Gathering start before this, like, in New York in the contemporary America, I guess?
That's something that's interesting because
they never explain it to me.
Right, like, that's something that in the first 30 minutes of the podcast, Jason and his buddies were talking about, like, why, if this has been going on for thousands of years, why here, why now? And it's like, well, maybe there's something geographically special about New York, so you had to wait for the whole world to know about it, and it to be, like, a international hub. Like, it could be like there's something special about the grounds of New York that you just had to wait for all of humanity to find it and come together at that spot. But it feels like didn't it feel to you like the Kruger showed up like he was at a fucking convention, like an expo, like, I'm here for The Gathering. Like The Gathering had just begun. And that's why all these people, weirdos were coming there.
Gotcha.
Like Connor had been in Europe in the 40s. Yeah. So, like, did he just come, like, when did he come to America?
Sometime after that.
Yeah, also, I guess this is something that I'm kind of, like, intuiting, but I thought The Gathering is kind of, like, maybe something that you don't even fully appreciate. You're, like, you're just compelled to go to this spot, and when you get there, there's, like, a special buzz in the air. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of that stuff that's fleshed out in the TV show.
So everything we're seeing in the modern sections of this movie is The Gathering?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Like, because there's at this time, there's only six left, right?
Something like
that. Because Kruger kills a guy in Jersey. Mm-hmm. Connor kills the dude in the parking garage. Kruger kills Captain Panaka.
Yeah.
And then there's Kruger and Connor. That's it, right? There's five. So there's five left.
Maybe Sean Connery was one, like the sixth?
Yeah, but he died
a long time ago.
400 years ago. Surely not. Connor has not ever killed an immortal until...
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Although, maybe.
And the other thing is, like,
why do we assume that?
I also don't know why there can be, like, maybe there can be only one, but, like, now when Connor dies of natural causes, does the game reset? Like, to me, I guess this is, like, some kind of genetic thing that's, like, a 1 in a million or 1 in a billion even shot, but, like, it'll happen again. Like, does it happen during Connor's lifetime, or does when he dies, does that energy return and, like, it starts all over again?
Also, so you remember that movie we watched, The Man from Earth?
Yes, I do.
About the man who was essentially Jesus Christ.
Yes, I do.
He was immortal, and he always had this problem of aging out of whatever role he found in society.
Yeah.
How does Connor avoid that?
I mean, they explain it in the film.
He
has taken on a succession of babies.
No. But how does he do it, like, face-to-face with real human beings, not on paper?
I think he goes to another area. Like, he's literally, like...
So he does The Man from Earth, and every 30 years or so, every 15, 30 years.
Moves
he
to a new
out.
Location and okay. starts everything all up again.
All right.
I mean, have to.
Seems like the only solution.
It seems like a tough...
Every movie lands on that
right,
solution.
Because, like, what else could you possibly do?
Except he hasn't done that with Rachel, right? Who he rescued in World War II and is now his secretary, his office manager.
Yeah, but that's in defiance of what Ramirez told him to not form right. connections. So, like, sure. he can't help himself.
Yeah. And he didn't do that with his former wife, Heather.
Right.
Either.
Yeah, he stayed in one spot with her.
Until she died.
So I think the other thing is, like, there might be the real play is to just, like, say it, this to say that you're the son, you, like, you I don't, man, how would you do that, though, and have no one know?
I think you'd be George Clooney and
it's like,
in
it's
air.
Like that goofy Bolton theory about Roose Bolton being immortal, and he just assumes the form of his son every 30 years or so, like, steals his skin and, like, all that. Like,
okay.
This is really crazy Game wow. of Thrones theory, but, like, I mean, that would be the ultimate. If you could just be like, hey, I've got this son. I'm turning over the family business to him. He's in his 30s. He's a man now. And then I'm going to step away from society. But you'd have to do some fucking makeup, and you'd have to stay out of the public yeah. eye, and you couldn't have anybody really close friends. It's probably easier just to kill off an identity and steal another one.
Yeah. And just move around.
And honestly, that's probably, like, I don't think immortals would even have to worry about that problem until, like, the last couple hundred years.
Right.
Because no one had records for shit, man. You yeah. could just walk to, you just take a boat to another continent and say, you're John Smith, and you're John Smith. Who's to say otherwise?
How do you get your money out of the bank?
That's a good question. But there again, you know, it's also a relatively modern time invention that things got tracked like that. Like, you know, you could go in as your as on the
years,
last
yeah.
day of your this selves, like he says, like this is the last day for Robert Nash or whatever. That's not it. That wasn't his name, but
something like that. Yeah.
And, like, you just take all your money out of the ATM or whatever, and then you deposit it with a new identity, and there you go. Like, up until the 70s or 80s, you could do that with impunity.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Like, here's a whole bunch of pounds sterling, and I'm transferred to South Bank that's new, and stop you?
I would love to see a story that kind of explores the hardships of being an undercover immortal in the future. Like, as things more and more buttoned down in the
right,
records regard, like,
right.
historically documented, how do you get away with that for
yeah, no,
the
like,
next 300
like
years?
Like, in the Looper universe
years.
Where everybody is implanted, or like the Altered Carbon, where everybody yeah. at the age of one has this uniquely
stack,
identifiable
yeah.
stack implanted into them. When we were talking about rebooting the Highlander, I had this crazy idea. It's like, oh, man, what if it was a Highlander in space and it's 1,000 years in the future and they got lightsabers and shit?
Uh-huh.
But, like, you're right. It gets harder and harder for an immortal to do something like that.
Yeah.
I wonder what you would
and
do.
And in Altered Carbon, the solution is people just know there are immortals, and that's fine. But
right.
if you
yeah.
wanted to stay undercover, I don't know how you'd do it.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing is, like, these immortals would be super... The other thing I kept on thinking is, like, you can't just come out to society as an immortal because people would find a way to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have godlike powers.
You can be killed.
You can be yeah. killed. And, like, something else in the Niter cast, they were entertaining questions like, say the villagers carried through their threat and set him on fire and burnt him.
Uh-huh.
Would eventually his head turn to charcoal and fall off, and then that counts as a decapitation?
Or, like, if you got hit by
or would he
an artillery
regenerate?
Shell
yeah.
and your entire body was just disintegrated.
Right.
Your head wasn't taken off your body. It was kind of the other way around.
Right.
Would
yeah.
that do it?
Yeah, your body's taken off your head. And
yeah.
I also was reading in, like, the Highlander wiki where I guess it's kind of, like, agreed upon the fandom that if you, like, you can't regrow a limb.
Sure, and that makes sense given that Clancy Brown has this giant scar across his neck, right?
But, on the other hand, these guys are sword fighters. Like, it seems like a pretty winning strategy to lop off a dude's arm or leg and then take off their head. Like,
sure.
And also, if you get your arm amputated, that's going to be pretty... I mean, we saw what it did to Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones. Like, that seems like it would be blood in the water for every immortal. Maybe that's the key. Like, if you get sufficiently maimed, you're just easy pickings and you're picked off.
I think so, yeah. We're seeing the strongest of the strong.
Right.
Essentially the luckiest of all of
them,
right?
These are this is the grand championship round. There's no amateurs at this level. This is the gold medal round for Immortals. I wish they would remake. Yeah, this is going to be my new go-to answer for what someone should. I feel like a really talented filmmaker that's maybe got, like, this would be a great project for, like, a Quentin Tarantino or a Rodriguez or...
Shit, I can't imagine what a Tarantino Highlander looks like.
It's a lot more foul mouth, a lot more racially charged. And it's also like an excuse.
Music.
Like, it seems like what Hollywood has discovered is, like, if you have a more diverse cast, it does, it's not any more interesting to American audiences, but also plays a lot better overseas. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the excuse to have, like you could have all kinds of different immortals. They could be from Russia and China and India and fucking Pakistan and Iraq and Nairobi and, like, all these other places, and it would just be seamless. It'd just be this big fucking blend of cultures and protagonists and antagonists and, like different time, like, because that's the other cool thing that I liked about the old series, if I remember correctly, watching it with my dad, is, like, it's also the excuse to just do period pieces from time to time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, hey, I want to see what it was like in Roman times, or I want to see what it's like living through the French Revolution, and, like, you know, not all those plots were probably carried out with the ultimate of historical accuracy, but
it's like Quantum Leap, right? It gives you an excuse to jump around in time.
It's Quantum Leap if Sam was chopping off heads at the end of every episode and getting, like, orgasms of electricity. Like, it's it's a cooler, yes, it's a cooler version of Quantum Leap.
Yep.
So now the question is, like, get the most gonzo director and then mash it up. Like I want Highlander with Altered Carbon and Star Wars and Quantum Leap. Isn't that the fucking coolest?
I think so, yeah.
And
we just made the best movie.
And it's also, like, effortlessly procedural, because you always have, like, bad guys of the week.
Oh, you're talking TV series, okay.
Well, like I'm going to HBO. Like, it could be effortlessly procedural, but also, like, seems like some of the most viral television or most fun I've had watching. Like, I think of, like, X-Files or, like, even Justified. Like, it's a blend of, like, a procedural hook that also is building to something.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, you know, the fucking... That's a Highlander, man. Why isn't this being? Why isn't this already remade?
I don't know.
Write
a pilot for it.
I'm gonna write some spec scripts.
Yeah.
And, like, why not? That's how the Double D's did it, right?
Yeah,
they didn't have shit for shit. They have a pot to piss in. They're just ultimate fanboys.
If anybody
of
wants
Gurm,
to get together and write this with me, I'm
yes,
down. Let's
Jason,
do this.
Call me. Let's make this happen. You are the Gen X director we need to make this project happen. Do we have anything else we want to say about this movie?
I have two pieces of trivia that I thought were, well, one that was just astounding.
Better than
that
Sean
was
Connery's perfected Spanish accent?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So apparently this quote-unquote stag, which I guess it is, even though... I guess the stags in that area didn't have horns, right? They just don't have horns
because
anymore.
Because of the season. Every year their horns fall off and they grow new ones, and the season they were shooting... No stags. Everybody looks like does.
So they took this stag and they sedated it, and they glued horns to its head, antlers to its head, and then when it woke up, the only thing it wanted to do was get these fucking antlers off its head.
Right.
And so they were barely able to get any shots. They had to use, like, National Geographic footage, stock footage to fill it in.
Like, they got a shot of the deer running, and that deer never stopped running.
It just ran off into the woods,
went
25 miles where they found it without antlers on its head.
Yeah.
Which I think is fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Nature finds a way, man.
And then the other piece of just mind-blowing trivia that I couldn't even believe they got away with this is, do you know how they made the sparks in this movie on the swords?
I don't believe it.
Okay.
I think some of these IMDb bon mots were made up, because this just seems...
This seems
as a
like
torture. Go ahead and tell the story.
So apparently what they did is they took the actors and they ran wires from their feet up through their clothing, down to their sleeves where it touched the sword, and they hooked car batteries up to these wires.
Right.
And one actor was positive, one actor was negative, terminals, and when they touched the swords, they made sparks fly. Mm-hmm. And you can see it on the screen. They somehow made these sparks happen.
Right.
Apparently that's how. And the swords got so hot from the electricity that they couldn't do many takes.
I'm surprised.
And apparently the actors are getting shocked, like, all the time.
Fuck yeah. That's what I'm like. As a person who's played with some jumper cables from time to time, it's super incredibly dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Like, That is a lot of fucking current, and that's a lot of bare exposed metal, and you're swinging around on sets that are flooded, and sets that have a bunch of other exposed metal. Like, it's just asking for people to be electrocuted.
I couldn't believe it when I read
that. I feel like it's bullshit.
Because
I never saw, like, that from an... It was always, like, an assertion at an IMDb or other trivia collection. There was no, like... And this 1987 interview, director blah, 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 said that they got, like... Because it just seems...
Yeah, I'd have to look it up on Wikipedia and see if they cite the source, because you're right.
Like everyone's...
How do you get away with that? Like, with the insurance companies
just the swords would, like, half the time spot weld together. Right. Like, it's yeah, I saw that, and I'm just like, there's no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
If it's true, I mean, but we also live in a world where, speaking of Diane Lang, she was part of a filming... movie. I forget the name of this movie, but do you remember when this went through the bald movie community that turns out someone made a movie with like hundreds of real lions and they were not trained in any way? And these lions like mauled several people, including Diane Lang. She almost got her scalp torn off, and like so many people were grievously mauled and maimed, and they trusted that people knew, but it turns out these filmmakers had no idea, and they're just trying to make this crazy nature picture about lions.
Wow.
And so, like, yeah, things were a lot wilder and woolier back in the day. We just talked about in The Exorcist how, like, these actors that got injured because of shoddy wiring. Like, man, back in the old days, it just seems like actors were treated like cattle.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's, like, the classic, was it Spartacus or Ben-Hur where a stuntman died? And, it was Ben-Hur during the still impressive Colosseum race.
I mean, shit like that happens even today.
It does. No. It's just, I think it's despite everyone's best efforts.
Absolutely.
Like, that was just like, you know, did you have the guy, was the guy in the chariot wearing a harness? Fuck no, they didn't wear harnesses back in Rome, my boy.
Right.
We're trying to go for historical accuracy here. Meanwhile, it's based on, like, you know, no real research or history. It's just like, everyone knows this is how, it feels like like now when people die in film, it's because of, like, despite lots of safety protocols and...
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I always feel like the last time that happened was like The Walking Dead. Like, I always feel super bad when someone dies making a movie, because, like, what's the most, like, frivolous way to die? You're dying making entertainment.
Yeah.
It's tragic. It's like Chuck E. Cheese having a heart attack, you know, or like Goofy in Walt Disney World. Like, you're there. This is a completely frivolous, nothing. This is not a war you're fighting. There's not a disease you're curing. You're not testing inoculation. You're just like trying to shuck and jive and make a buck, and you die. It's terrible.
Yeah, they're taking huge risks. And it's funny too, with this sword fight spark thing, because the movie knows that electricity is dangerous. On that final rooftop battle where there's all this electricity surging everywhere, you can see that Rachel, I've
already forgotten her name.
I don't remember her name, but she's crawling along the edge of the roof, desperately trying to avoid the water.
Right.
Because the water is electrified. The movie knows how dangerous electricity is, and yet they're using it on their actors to get this fucking spark on their sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's so ironic.
Because, like I said, I got another 90 minutes of Highlander Nattercast to listen to. Maybe they'll go into that. Because, yeah, I read that, and I'm like, there's just no fuck. But, again, 80s are crazy. Okay, I think that's a perfectly Highlander podcast.
Yeah,
the one can make there, and fortunately there cannot be only one, because there's at least two, ours and the Nattercast. Go to Nattercast.com to check them out. They also have this thriving Facebook community that they built up, and they've built up a series of like portals on Facebook. So if you search for "I Can't Stop Watching," they have all kinds of, like, I can't stop watching Netflix. I can't stop watching, like, XYZ. And so you can find their community that way. And, again, at nattercast.com. And I will link in the show notes their Highlander companion podcast. Mm-hmm. Or I guess that's the main podcast. We're the companion to that one at this point.
Oh, man.
Thanks so much for your support and love over the years, Jason. We really appreciate it.
And especially for this movie, I just had a ton of fun watching it and talking about it.
Yeah, I was kind of dreading it because I remember him saying it was like one of his favorites, and like I always hate. And I remember the last time I watched it thinking like, why is this movie so well regarded? And maybe it's because I've been watching a lot of the. I realized during the Baldies that I never finished the revival of Netflix, or the revival of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on Netflix. And I just watched like Wizards of the Lost Kingdom 1 and 2. So maybe my standards for schlock were reset. But I had a lot of fun watching this film and I had a lot of fun podcasting about it. So if you like to commission your podcast, too bad you can't. The commission queue is closed for now as we are working through our immense backlog and trying to figure out what we want to do with that feature in the future. But stay tuned here as we figure out how we're going to... what we're going to do next, if we are going to open the commission queue, if so, how much it is and all that. Well, that's all to come. But you can find all that stuff at baldmove.com. That's the place to stay tuned to, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Jason, thanks for the commission. And we'll see you guys real soon. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.